reading from Bridge of Birds, a novel of an ancient China that never was, by Barry Hugert. Chapter 20, The Cavern of Bells. Hour after hour, the palm leaf blades whirled overhead, and flames and smoke spurted out behind us as the incredible bamboo dragonfly flew across the searing white salt. We used our tunics to guide us around whirlwinds, and the heat from the desert was like fiery fingers that pushed us higher and higher into the sky. With the last light of the setting sun, Miser Shen pointed ahead to a long, dark line on the horizon. "Those are trees!" he exclaimed. "The desert of salt is coming to an end!" The best proof of that lay in the dark clouds that were building up. Lightning flickered in the distance, and I doubted that it had rained in the desert for 1,000 years. "A gentleman, we could be in bad trouble if the basket that we're riding in fills with water," Li Kao pointed out. We pried 3 bamboo pieces from the framework at the bottom of the basket, which not only made a drainage hole, but also provided us with 3 poles for umbrellas. Thin strips from the circular rim provided the frames, and our trousers served as the covers. We finished just in time. Lightning flashed, and thunder roared, and rain fell in torrents. But we clutched our umbrellas and sailed through the storm quite comfortably.
"I have always wanted to fly through a thunderstorm," Master Li shouted happily.
"Magnificent!"
Miser Shen and I yelled as one.
It really was spectacular, and we were rather disappointed when the storm passed and the moon and stars came out.
Wind whistled around our ears, and a river gleamed like silver far below us. The bamboo dragonfly flew steadily on, and flames and smoke spurted out behind us as we drifted gently across the deep purple sky of China. A tiny spark that flickered beneath the glow of 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,
Lee, and I rode through the night, staring up at the stars and down at the moonlit earth far below. The sensation of flight was far different from that which I had experienced in my dreams, and, to tell the truth, I far preferred dream flight. Then I was like a bird, using the wind like the current of a stream, delighting in almost total freedom. But now I was simply a passenger riding in a basket beneath whirling blades, and I silently chided myself for being too cloddish to appreciate properly an experience that was very close to being miraculous. Master Lee was also chiding himself, as I learned when he began to mutter in his sleep, but for a different reason.
"Fool," he muttered, "blind as a bat, use your head."
Then he shifted restlessly and scratched his nose.
"Why not on the island, waiting at the end of the bridge?" he muttered angrily. "Stupid! Makes no sense!"
He fell silent again, and it occurred to me that if he was dreaming about the hand that no one sees, he had a good reason to think that it made no sense, assuming that the hand guarded the Duke's treasure trove, as the tide had guarded the first one. Why not put the monster on the island, silently and invisibly waiting at the other end of that narrow bridge? Anyone who approached the treasure would simply be serving breakfast in bed to a hungry spider.
"Children," Master Lee muttered, restlessly turning and shifting, "games, stupid or childish, a little boy?"
He sighed, and his breathing grew more regular, and then I heard nothing but deep snores. Miser Shen was dreaming, too, and a tear was trickling down the sharp curve of his nose. He was making faint sounds, and I leaned close.
"Ah, Chen," he whispered, "your father is here."
He said no more, and finally I too fell asleep. When I awoke, I discovered that we were flying through pink and orange clouds, pale against a turquoise sky, and the morning sun was shining upon mountain peaks all around us, as Li Hao and Miser Shen used their tunics to guide the bamboo dragonfly through a narrow pass where fantastic trees precariously perched, spreading their branches to capture wisps of clouds and to weave them into the patterns of dreams like the landscapes of Mei Fei. I yawned and spread my tunic behind me like a rudder, and we passed so close to one high jagged peak that I let go with one hand and reached out and scooped up a handful of snow, which tasted delicious. Then we sailed through the pass and began to fly over a beautiful green valley, where tiny wisps of smoke drifted up from fields where farmers were burning weeds, and the breeze was fragrant with wet earth and trees and grass and flowers. Around mid-morning, the tubes of fire drug began to sputter and fizzle. The palm leaf blades whirled slower and slower, and we began to descend toward a small village nestled beside a broad river. You may be sure that peasants gathered from miles around to watch the gradual descent of a fire-breathing bird from heaven. We hovered above the village square, and the fire drug produced one final spurt of flame and puff of black smoke, and then we settled lightly to earth. The crowd gaped at three Chinese gentlemen, tastefully attired in loincloths and money belts, who stepped grandly from the basket, clutching umbrellas. My surname is Li, and my personal name is Cao, and there is a slight flaw in my character, said Master Li, with a polite bow. This is my esteemed client, Number 10 Ox, and this is Old Generosity, formerly known as Miser Shen. We hereby donate the incredible bamboo dragonfly to your delightful village. Build a fence around it, charge admission. Your fortunes shall be made. And now you may direct us to the nearest wine shop, for we intend to stay drunk for a week. Miser Shen would have liked to do just that, but by some incredible stroke of luck, our flying machine had brought us very close to the Cavern of Bells. It was only a short distance downstream, so we bought a boat and shoved off into the current, and 2 days later Miser Shen pointed ahead. A stone bell mountain, he said. The entrance to the Cavern of Bells is at the water's edge, and we should be able to sail right inside. Li Cao nudged my arm. Ox, I have heard that the Duke's tax trip takes him past Stone Bell Mountain, he whispered. If the painting in the Cavern of Bells is as Miser Shen described it, then the Duke of Qin may have more than a casual interest in the place. I remembered his earlier warning, and I peered around fearfully for 200-foot armor-plated winged water moccasins as our little boat glided through the dark entrance. But then I cried out in wonder and delight. It was like sailing into one of those beautiful undersea palaces in Buddhist fairy tales. Sunlight from the entrance struck emerald water that glittered like green fire, and then the rays bounced up the stone walls that were studded with crystals that sparkled with every color of the spectrum. It was a world wrapped in rainbows. The strangest rocks that I had ever seen pointed up through the water and down from the roof. They were like spears, but turned around so that the thick handles pointed out. Li Cao had never visited the cavern before, but he had read a great deal about it. The bell stones, he said. When the water rises, it strikes the stones on the bottom, which ring like bells, and the vibration causes the stones on the ceiling to respond with bell sounds of their own. The phenomenon is called sympathetic resonance. Deeper in the cavern are other stones formed from soft rock, through which tiny holes have been worn, and when the water rushes through the holes, it provides more music to accompany the bells. Su Tengpo has written an interesting monograph on the subject.
We reached a wooden pier and tied our boat to one of the posts. A flight of stone steps led up to the great hall of the cavern, where a shrine had been set up. We appeared to be the only visitors, and the shrine was tended by 4 monks. 3 of them wore black robes, and the 4th wore crimson. And the one in crimson came trotting up. He was a tiny fellow with a high, squeaking voice.
"May Buddha be with you,"
he said with a deep bow.
"I am the custodian of the Temple of the Peddler, and my 3 brother monks belong to a different order nearby. In the passage to your left, you will find the sacred painting of the deity of the Cavern of Bells. It is very ancient and very mysterious, and neither I nor my predecessors truly understand it. It is undeniably divine, and I live in hopes that some day a visitor will be able to explain it to me. May you be the wise visitors I seek," he said with another bow.
"Will you forgive me if I do not accompany you? My brothers and I are slowly going mad as we attempt to balance our subscription books." The little monk pattered back to join the others, and we walked down the passageway that he had indicated. At the end of it there were flickering torches that framed something upon the wall, and Miser Shen pointed to it.
"The painting that I spoke of," he said, while Li Kao and I stared at ghosts. There could be no question about it. The painting depicted an old peddler with his back to us, who is facing the murdered maiden whose ghost we had seen at the castle of the labyrinth. To her left stood the murdered maiden whose ghost had appeared on the island, and to her right stood a 3rd girl who could have been their sister.
Li Kao snatched one of the torches from the brackets and went over the painting inch by inch. The peddler's robe was covered with colored pearls and lotus blossoms, and he was supported by a crutch beneath his left armpit. His hands were extended to the maidens. In the left hand he held 3 tiny white feathers, and in the right hand he held a miniature flute and crystal ball that were precisely like the ones in Li Kao's belt, as well as a tiny bronze bell. The painting was very ancient, but what did it mean?
"The emblems on the lame peddler's robe usually signify heaven, in which case this might be a painting of Tie Kwa Li, the 4th immortal,"
Master Li said thoughtfully.
"But 2 things are wrong, and one of them rules out such an interpretation. He should be carrying a large calabash on his back, and he could not possibly be leaning upon a wooden crutch. After all, the name means Li with the iron crutch."
He went back over the painting with his eyes no more than an inch from the surface.
"On the other hand, the emblems on the robe can signify the supernatural, and that includes the evil supernatural," he muttered. "We know that 2 of the girls were murdered, and I am willing to lay enormous odds against the possibility that the 3rd girl died peacefully in bed. The maddening thing is that I can find no trace of something that should be included."
I looked at him inquiringly.
"Ginseng," he explained. "Ox, for some mysterious reason, our quest for the great root and the ghosts of the handmaidens are linked together, and so are the games of children, the village of Khufu, dragon's pillow, nonsense rhymes, feathers, birds that must fly, the Duke of Qin, all of the dukes, come to think of it, and Buddha knows what else."
He straightened up and shrugged.
"If we ever figure it out, it should make a marvelous story," he sighed. "Let's go see if those monks can tell us something useful."
The 3 monks in black had disappeared, but the little monk in crimson was more than helpful.
"No, we have never been able to grasp the meaning of the trinkets and the feathers," he said. "The feathers are particularly puzzling, because there is another painting deeper in the cavern that depicts feathers. It is so old that most of the paint is worn away.
but one can clearly make out feathers and the symbol of the constellation Orion. Again, I have no idea what it means." Li Cao's eyes were sparkling. "Ox, in ancient times, a roof, three beams, and the number three formed the ideograph for Orion. It was also used to signify ginseng, particularly when the symbol for heart was at the point of the beams, and that would mean the heart of the great root of power," he whispered. I was beginning to catch some of his excitement myself, and we eagerly followed the little monk to the opening of another tunnel. He offered us torches from the wall brackets. "You will find the painting at the end, and in the meantime you will learn why we are certain that the peddler is divine," he said. "Fortunately, you have arrived during the rainy season, and the water has begun to rise in the peddler's cavern. Soon it will strike the bell stones, and only heaven could produce such music. The stones are deep beneath the tunnel, but there are side passages that will enable you to hear the music clearly." Miser Shen's previous visit had been during the wrong season for the bell music, and he was rather skeptical about it. As we moved down the low, dark tunnel, the slap of our sandals was joined by the sound of water lapping against rocks, far below us and to the left side. Then the water rose high enough, and we knew that the monk had not lied. This was the music of heaven. A stone bell chimed. Just as the echo was fading away, it was answered by a second bell that was soft and sweet and slightly blurred, as though the sound were sifted through honey. Another bell answered, higher and clearer and perfectly in harmony. And then bell after bell chimed in. Big bells, small bells, loud bells, soft bells, clear bells, cloudy bells. And we walked along in enchantment while our torches cast immense shadows upon the stone walls. I cannot describe the beauty of the stone bell song. Then the water reached the soft rocks and began to rush through tiny holes, and the bells were joined by the sound of a thousand silver lutes being stroked by a million murmuring bees. The combination of sounds was lifting our souls right out of our bodies, and ahead of us was a side passageway that was large enough to enter. The music poured from it, and we turned as one and trotted down the passageway toward the ravishing song. Tears were streaming down Miser Shen's cheeks. He began to run, with his arms spread wide to catch and embrace the music, and we were right at his heels while our shadows leaped and jumped all around us. A rock moved beneath Miser Shen's foot, and I heard a harsh, metallic whang. Miser Shen lifted into the air and flew backward into my arms, and I stared stupidly at the iron shaft of a crossbow bolt that was protruding from his chest.